From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for March 24th, 2023. Checking the calendar, your Milwaukee Bucks, the best team in the NBA, are on the road all week. They're in Salt Lake, Denver, Detroit, and Indianapolis. This coming Thursday, the Brewers open the regular season in Chicago with the Cubs. And then the home opener is Monday, April 3rd with the Mets. Well, today's National Cocktail Day and National Chocolate Covered Raisin Day. I know which one I'm choosing. Let's just start beating on Florida right now. A man in Daytona Beach heard a banging on his front door. He went to check it out and came face to face with a 9-foot alligator. It immediately bit him on the upper thigh. What are the odds he's now a proud owner of a Ring doorbell camera? Well, it's not civil or polite. It's not even illegal, but a judge in Canada has ruled that it's your God-given right to give someone the finger. If it were illegal, everyone in Chicago would have a police record. A European space agency wants to give the moon its own time zone, calling it the lunar time zone. So the odds are pretty good that it's always going to be 5 o'clock somewhere. No one could have guessed that Cocaine Bear was going to be a feel-good hit movie of the winter. Well, a wildcat, as in mountain lion, was caught in Cincinnati, and it tested positive for cocaine. Now, I'm not sure where these animals get their coke, but I smell a sequel. On the podcast today, we have Art Rothschild, Adam Bailey, Joel Dreesing, and wrapping up the week, here's Kyle Tedding.
Well, thanks, Max. I appreciate that the alligator was at least knocking on the door. They're nothing if not polite. A strong week overall for the markets. The NASDAQ up 1.7%, closing at 11,824. The S&P up 1.2%, closing at 3963. And despite a bit of a downturn to start Friday, the Dow finished up the day 126 points on Friday, up 1.2% for the week. That's 369 points, up 32.231 at the close. For the year, the Dow Jones Industrial Average still down 2.2%. The broader markets, the S&P up 3.6%, and the NASDAQ a stellar 13.2%. You know, Art, I think we can look at this week's returns and be encouraged by the fact that it's another positive week. Certainly, there's a lot of nuance to that. You know, we get a couple of down weeks earlier in the month, February, maybe a little bit tougher month. But when you look at kind of how this all shakes out together, it feels like we're in a little bit of a tighter range now. I know you mentioned in some of your comments earlier that maybe you'd be willing to share with us kind of how, you know, you're hearing more and more that it feels like maybe the market's in a bit of a holding pattern.
Yeah, one of my clients earlier this week used that exact term. She suggested that it just seems like she's in a holding pattern. We're not really going anywhere. This year to date is indicative of that. As you and I were talking about a few minutes ago, we're back to where we were as of the end of today. We're back to where we were as of the end of February. So we've gone nowhere this month other than up and down, at least on the S&P 500. The other interesting thing is that the NASDAQ is up, 13% for the year. That was the biggest loser, you know, last year. So a little bit of excitement in certain parts of the market. But I think the most important thing to appreciate is the perspective you have to have to be a successful long-term investor. You shouldn't expect to make money on any given day, week, month. You should expect to make money over long periods of time. So I quickly changed the discussion, you know, from the holding pattern that we were in to agree with it. Yeah, it sure seems like we're going nowhere. But look at how well you've done over the past 3 years. Look at how well you've done over the past 5 years. Look at how well you've done over the past 10 years. And then go back to the beginning, and holy smokes, you've made a lot of money. So it's important not to get distracted by the news of the day and the volatility of the moment.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I like another perspective item. I like how you said that we haven't gone anywhere in the last 4 weeks except up and down a lot. So it's the short stuff in between that, you know, if people pay attention to that, that volatility can be unsettling. But as you point out, over those weeks, not much of a change.
Yeah, it'd be short term, you're right. But you take a step back and you realize like, okay, fine, 4 out of 5 up year, or 4 out of 5 years are up years, 4 out of 5 days are up days opposed to down ones. And you look back over the past several years, well, take a look where we were 3 years ago, right? 3 years ago to the day, we were in the middle of a COVID-induced recession. We had 15 million people unemployed, and we were kind of in a free fall, right? That's where we were in March of 2020. If you take a look at account balances or account performance from 3 years ago, my goodness, you might be up 25, 35% from this point, 2020. Just a reminder that over time, there's more up days than down days, even if it feels like temporarily, we're not going anywhere.
Yeah, and Adam, framing that a little more precisely, we just had 2 bear markets within the past 3 years. I've been here 31 years. I've never seen a time period in which we had 2 bear markets back to back, and we're still, you know, ahead, as you suggest, for the 3 years. So pretty incredible, really.
Yeah, not just that, but a recession and 2 bear markets, 2 significant economic events back to back. And if you look 3 years ago where you were to where you are today, even still, you're likely well ahead of where you were, even with 2 significant economic events back to back.
Yeah, put some hard numbers to that. Since the S&P's peak prior to COVID, so before we got the first of the 2 bear markets, the S&P is still up just in price returns, not including the dividends, it's still up 17%. And so to be able to point to a number that over, you know, a 3 year and a couple of month stretch is still a 17% positive return, given everything we've dealt with, yeah, it's no wonder that you feel like you're in a holding pattern. It's been a lot of back and forth. There's been a lot of down that we're maybe not as used to the past decade as what we had seen leading up to it. And so, I guess the remaining question is where we go from here. And certainly, Adam, this week, the Federal Reserve gave us a little more guidance on what that looks like. The Fed's certainly been the thing that caused some of the downward spiral last year. It's been the thing that remains in focus. We got another quarter point increase on the overnight rate. But I think the bigger question remains, you know, what's the Fed do next?
So speaking of who is not in a holding pattern this week, Federal Reserve raised rates by 0.25%, in line with what pretty much everybody expected. And they did just kind of reaffirm their plan and their game plan for this one, but they did change some of the language slightly in their written materials and even some of Jay Powell's oral, just his speaking points. They removed the ongoing increases from their language. So that begs the question, are we going to get one in May? I don't know. Ask us in June. We'll tell you. But they added some additional firming in place of those ongoing increases. And I think the language is important here because it sets up a position where maybe they don't have to raise rates. They could. But there's also plenty of other tools in their toolkit to, you know, tighten monetary policy. They could reduce asset purchases. They could reduce their balance sheets. There's lots of other tools in their toolkits apart from just raising rates. And that's one of the things that the market has been worried about is, okay, when are they going to raise rates again? How much is it going to be? And perhaps that might be in the rearview mirror. We'll know more this spring. It's too early to tell.
Adam, that reminds me of inflating a mattress. And when you're saying that it's firm already, that just sort of means that you're kind of settling for the fine points now. You're not pumping a lot of air in it yet.
Yeah, this week had the potential to be disastrous. A lot of people were forecasting that the Fed were going to stand pat, not raise rates. They decided to send a message clearly that they can do more than one thing, you know, at a time. So they're focused on raising rates to slow inflation while they're also working behind the scenes to make sure that they shore up the banking system that, quite frankly, is in crisis mode. And that, Adam, as you allude to, that also will slow the economy. If small businesses can't get the loans that they needed to expand, they can't hire the people they need to expand, that will have an effect of slowing the economy. And the Fed knows that. So they, even though they only raised 0.25%, I mean, the effect almost could be like having raised it 0.5%, you know, this week, just with the events, you know, of recent weeks in the banking system.
Yeah, you mentioned something that this week could have been a whole lot different and perhaps different to the downside it was an uneventful week in terms of earnings, right? I don't know of any meaningful earnings reports out this week. There was virtually no meaningful economic reports. Joel, I know you're going to get to them in like a minute, but there's like three. And I also think this week was options expiration week. So we could have had a lot of volatility to the downside, and yet here we finished in the positive, even with all that's going on.
And I think I want to circle back, Art, to something you said about some of the liquidity, the credit crunch that's out there right now, potentially from the banks, and a reminder that if you're a bank facing draws on your deposits, you're less willing to lend. And if you are going to lend, you're going to raise your lending standards. And if you are going to lend, you're going to raise the interest rates you charge. And so you're spot on that all of that weighs on the ability for borrowers to get access to capital. We've seen it. We've seen it in debt markets. We've seen it in equity markets the past few weeks. No new issues coming to the NYSE in the last couple of weeks. Borrowing, even from investment grade borrowers, is virtually non-existent right now in the debt markets. And so we're seeing a slowdown in borrowing, which very quickly can make its way into a slowdown in the economy more broadly. And quite honestly, the Fed recognizes that their job now is to see what the spillover from the banking crisis is. They've been clear that the banking system is sound, but that doesn't mean that there aren't impacts to what they've had to do to stabilize that system. And that doesn't mean that there aren't more questions that are out there. And so I think as we look at maybe, all right, what are the concerns over the next few quarters? It's less now about the Fed. I think we're pretty clear the Fed is closer to the end than the beginning. They've slowed the pace. Yeah, the inflation war isn't won, but I think it's clear which side you want to be on. And just as importantly, now the questions for the Fed become, all right, how much farther do they have to go? When will they get there? Because when you look at the long-term forecasts don't suggest there's much more in the cards. There's not much more baked into this economic cake for rate increases. And so what's left is, what are the holdovers from some of these other problems, and what does it mean going forward? You know, Joel, I think as we look at some of the economic data this week, I think more or less every week for the last year, I've said more of the same.
Some mixed news.
And maybe some more mixed news on the economic front again this week.
Yeah, as Adam said, we didn't have a whole lot of developments, but we had two reports on housing, both of them showing that housing continues to slow again because of higher interest rates, which is, you know, crimping demand for mortgages. But both also showed some resilience in the industry. The National Association of Realtors said that existing home sales actually went up in February for the first time in 13 months. But also because of the market, because of, you know, less demand, because of those higher interest rates, the sales price is going down. It went down on a year-to-year basis. It went down for the first time in nearly 11 years, every month. So 131 months in a row that year-to-year price went up, and in February it went down. So that was, and the Department of Commerce also had some new home sales numbers, and it was the same sort of a thing where the year-to-year home price for new homes in January went down for the first time in many months. And there again, we saw that the demand for housing is going down.
And maybe for the better when you consider that inventories have been weak for a long time, when you consider, you know, just how much emphasis I think we put on the housing market. It's a really difficult thing to factor into the inflation numbers. There isn't a clear connection between house prices and, you know, the impact on inflation overall. And the big reason for that is if you bought a house 10 years ago, versus buying a house today, it's going to factor very differently into what your expectations are for monthly payments, for what the impact of housing is on kind of the overall inflation level. And so, you know, I think housing, while it's such a big part of our overall spend, it's not always the biggest factor when we're looking at inflation overall. You know, I think one more bit on the inflation front this week, the Bank of England came out with a quarter point rate increase as well. And in that, the real interesting piece was the part about the Bank of England suggesting that they're seeing signs that the recent uptick in inflation, after we'd been going down for a while, we saw a little bit of a quick spike, that potentially that recent uptick will quickly fade here. And so I think, you know, at a minimum, you've got some forces out there suggesting that they're seeing similar things. Now, of course, we used that word transient for a long time last year to talk about inflation, and it does sound suspiciously like maybe that's what the Bank of England is doing here. But also, you know that maybe some of the forces that are out there are finally starting to line up, whether it's the housing numbers, whether it's a slowing economy overall. You know, I think I'm fairly optimistic that the 9% inflation days are fairly well behind us. And if we can get back towards that 2% target, it's not going to be tomorrow. It's not going to probably even be this year. But if we keep heading in that direction, the conversation gets easier.
Yeah, the analogy I've been using with clients is, you know, we've clearly broken the fever pitch of inflation, right? I mean, we're not out of the infirmary yet, but we're on the mend, and we're getting better, and we're getting close to the point where, you know, inflation is going to hit the 2 to 3% number. And you see that Bank of England and also the Federal Reserve here raising rates this week, and you try to like read between the lines and, okay, maybe they're willing to accept just a little bit higher inflation as opposed to a recession. But it's definitely pointing towards a lower inflationary environment, and we are continuing on the mend.
Adam, I'm going to go back to some comments you made a few months ago talking about the Fed's job in landing the plane that is the economy in the midst of high inflation. And you referenced this idea of landing a plane in crosswinds and trying to walk in a smooth landing here. And how apt that analogy was many months back now, that we continue to kind of fine tune the landing that is the economy.
Yeah, and I'm impressed that you even remember that. I'll give the analogy real quick, because I was corrected by my father, a pilot, on the analogy that I was giving and trying to land a plane into a stiff crosswind, and you got to come in fast and hard. And I was explaining that's how the Federal Reserve is acting aggressively. And my dad looked at me and said, no, that's not entirely true. If you're coming in and you're landing a plane in a stiff crosswind on a narrow runway that's getting shorter, yeah, you got to do all that. But as you're doing it, you slip it in. The entire time on your final approach, the nose of the plane is pointing somewhere else besides down the center line of the runway. And it's not until the last minute, just before you touch down, that the pilot, a competent one, will bring that nose around just before you touch down. But you kind of have to crab walk it in. And the whole time you're on final approach, you're pointing in what feels like the wrong way. And gosh, that really feels like what we're going through right now.
And of course, you said competent pilot in there. And so, you know, I think some listeners question, all right, well, how well is the Fed really doing? I think, quite honestly, that the task they've been given is not an enviable one. And the job they've been doing so far seems to work. So while it's difficult to say the job's over, maybe the plane's not on the ground yet, or if it is, maybe it hasn't come to a stop. But at least for now, they've navigated those issues, I think, about as well as we can expect. Well, thank you all for listening to the show. We enjoy doing it for you. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.